Music provided by Armstrong. Visit armstrongofficial.com to hear more badass music.
Welcome to the TriCast Gaming Podcast.
Greetings and welcome everyone to episode number 90 of the TriCast Gaming Podcast. I am your host, Grimlock Philip Keeney, and I am joined tonight by Mike Roguevox Martinez. Mike, how are you doing this fine evening where we hit 90 episodes?
I'm doing fantastic, man. Just a little tired, but I think I'm going to make it.
Oh, you're going to make it. It'll be great. It'll be great. 90 episodes. I mean, we're about roughly 2.5 months away from 100, which is just crazy. I never thought that we would get this far. But now I'm this far and I'm like, I don't know how to stop. I can't stop. It's just,
right. It's like this habit that you just have to keep doing, you know? It just feels wrong to skip a week now. Like it just, your week is screwed up.
Yeah. Something's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love doing it. It's great. It's a lot of fun to sit down and talk about the things that are interesting in the gaming industry right now. Mm-hmm. And this week is going to be really fun because we've actually got a game that's brand new. It's just been out about 6 or 7 weeks and we're both playing it and both enjoying it. And we can sit here and talk about it and do a deep dive on it together. And I'm really excited about that. So we're going to have fun tonight, I think.
I'm very excited because we haven't really did a deep dive on this game. And I've been playing this game since 2014.
It's true. We haven't. And for those of you that are wondering which one we're alluding to, I'm going to intentionally keep it cryptic a little bit just for a little bit of fun. We'll see how long those listening it takes you to guess. But this game was actually in my top 10. Actually, I think it was like in my top 5 of games of the generation, last generation. And yet here we are still playing it. The word I want to use? Like nonstop.
Right. And it's not Grand Theft Auto.
It is not Grand Theft Auto. You are correct. Actually, I rated this game at number 4 on my Games of the Generation list last... whenever we did it. We did the... even that has been like over a year ago.
Yeah.
Because we did it right with the release of the last... Of the new-gen consoles, which... would have been fall of 2020, so it's pretty wild.
Jeez, that is... Yeah. Oh my god. I feel like we still don't have any... Like, it's still hard to get the new consoles.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting thing. And I mean, we probably should talk about that at some point in more detail. Like, when will we ever see these consoles easy to get? I will say it appears that the Xbox is becoming easier and easier to find. At least the Xbox Series S for sure. I mean, every time I go into my Target or Walmart, they've got a couple of those on the shelf to purchase. So I think that one's getting easier. But the PlayStation 5 is still just so hard to find.
Right.
And I mean, I would argue too that we haven't really had a true killer new gen title yet, you know, an exclusive new gen game that's really been something that really could drive and what's the word I'm looking for? Just make people want that new console.
Right. Know? Yeah. I thought Halo was going to do it, but it's just kind of, the campaign is pretty good. It's just, it needs that well-rounded part of the PvP aspect of it. And that's just kind of suffering. I don't know if you've read any articles on it, but even the developers like, Yeah, we're dragging our feet on new content.
Yeah, I mean, Halo is one of the two games that I'm just like really still stuck on right now. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I read a lot about it. And I know the one you're talking about where he said, you know, we understand players are losing patience in us and rightly mm-hmm. so. I mean, of course, Halo Infinite is not a new-gen only title. It has a... Xbox One and Xbox Series X version.
True. I forgot about that.
Yeah, there's not many exclusive new gen titles. And I'm really hoping we're about to start seeing that that wall broken. You know, we've got Redfall and Starfield coming out later this year. You know, some other games, like I think that new Harry Potter game might be new gen only.
Right. Is that a PlayStation exclusive?
No, no. Actually, it's even going to be on Switch, I think. There's even a Switch. Yeah. Shit. Which I don't even know how that works. But
how?
Yeah.
That game looks amazing.
But I'm really hopeful that we're about to start seeing that ceiling broken. Yeah. And we're about to start seeing a flood of new gen titles. I mean, we know on the PlayStation front that God of War Ragnarok is still to come out. Mm-hmm. We don't know when, but that's the only PlayStation exclusive game that we know is supposed to be this year at some point. After that, we really don't know anything that PlayStation is working on. So I would expect a lot coming from them, and all of that new stuff I would expect to be new gen. On the Xbox front, you know, we know of Redfall and Starfield from Bethesda, but we don't really know of anything that the other Xbox first party studios are doing at this point. So again, I would expect a lot of stuff coming from them, and a lot of that's going to be new gen titles. So I'm really hopeful. I'm really hopeful that we're about to start breaking through and we're about to start seeing what these consoles can really do. But
Yeah, it's already been over, what, it's almost 2 years? Over a year and a half, roughly, that the new gen's been out.
They came out November of 2020.
Right. So, I mean, it's getting to that point where developers could start announcing some stuff for the new gen stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, we're also getting to the point where so many things that have been delayed are going to have to start getting released. Yeah. And we could end up in a situation where we've just got games on top of games. And I mean, we already saw something like that in February and March of this year. So
what do you think about them like releasing, like, is that, do you think it hurts games whenever everything just kind of gets dumped all in 1 month, or do you do you not think it matters? Because for me, I do not like that at all.
Yeah, 100% it matters. I mean, I'm sitting here looking at, you know, what did I actually play? So I've played Destiny the Witch Queen. I've played Horizon Zero or Forbidden West. Mm-hmm. And that's basically it from the March, February, March release timeframe. I play a little bit of Gran Turismo 7 as well. But that's because I can't get to, I mean, I'm looking at like Dying Light 2. I just totally was like, I'm not even going to try with that one. But I'm looking at Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, Ghostwire Tokyo, Elden Ring. I didn't even touch Elden Ring. The new Lego Star Wars game just came out. Like, I'm looking at all these going, man, they all look good.
Right. And see, what I think happens is like especially like gamers, like how, like the your type of hobbyist genre, like how you play video games is like, because you're going to play a game and you're going to play it all the way through. And then by the time you're finishing that, there's a new game that's been released, and those other ones that were released in February and March are going to kind of fall through the cracks. Mm-hmm. And it's something you may have to go back and revisit if you remember to do that. You know what I mean? And it's just, I think it really hurts to get everything released all at once like that.
Yeah. And it's weird because I don't really see much in the way of April and May releases. So why didn't some of these push out? You know, I don't really understand how people kind of come to their, you know, release schedule and, and when they're going to put things out. But I mean, you know, we had the Lego Star Wars game came out and MLB The Show 22 just came out, if you're into that. And outside of that, there literally is nothing else coming out in April.
I wonder if it's like a financials thing, you know what I mean? Like to release it within a certain quarter, possibly.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, end of March would have been in. Yeah, you know what? You're 100% right. That is what happened. Mm-hmm. You have all of these games that had to get out in FY22. Yeah, FY22, which would have ended at the end of March.
Right.
So that's how we ended up with a bajillion games in February. And yeah, I'm looking at my schedule here that I wrote down. These are, you know, I try to write down a range of games that I think people might be interested in, not just me. Right. And even then, all I wrote down for April was Stalker 2, which got delayed to December, and maybe even longer than that since that developer is in Ukraine. That's a really difficult situation for them. I think they've moved out of Ukraine to Poland, but yeah, they've definitely...
Yeah, that's rough.
Yeah. Then you got Lego Star Wars Skywalker Saga, which did release today, or not today, this week. And you got MLB The Show, which also released this week. Nintendo Switch Sports at the end of April. And then that's it. That's it for April. So only three games from April. Right. And then the four that I wrote down in May, Sons of the Forest got delayed. Forspoken got delayed. 2 Point Campus got delayed. And then Salt and Sacrifice, which I'm not sure where that one's at. I'd have to double check on that.
Right.
So like, and then I for June, I wrote down Mario Strikers, and that's it.
You would think like, I don't know. For me, like, summertime is like prime gaming time. So like, especially for people still in school, like, you would think these kids would be asking their parents for a video game to play during the summer or something. Or they're working a summer job and they can go actually buy get a new game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like summer and Christmas, I think, are like, in my opinion, the prime time to release.
Yeah, except nothing ever releases during those times.
No.
Now, the Christmas, I can kind of understand they want to get out before Black Friday because most people have done their Christmas shopping by then.
Right.
But yeah, the summer thing has never made sense to me.
I don't
PlayStation has seen some success with that. The Last of Us released in the summer, I think. Mm-hmm. Ghost of Tsushima as well, I think, was a summer release.
Right.
So PlayStation have seen some success with that, but not many others. Anyway, I don't know how we got down this tangent. We got really far down. It all started with us going, how did we get to 90 episodes? Right. And how far things have spun out of control because of the pandemic and how times have just sped up and slowed down and shifted in weird ways. It's almost like we've time traveled across the last 2 years, which is wild. Yeah, 2 years ago. Pandemic started
and then,
March of 2020.
Then we started the podcast.
Yeah.
In the midst
and we started the podcast because I was like, dude, I've been wanting to do this forever. And now we're in the middle of this earth ending pandemic. So if we're going to do it, we need to do it now.
Right. We're all at home. We're playing video games now a little bit more.
So. Yep. All right, man. Well, good reminiscing. Before we get into actual games, though, you were not on the show last week, so I didn't get your take on potentially Moon Knight and the Halo TV series. Have you watched either of those yet?
I have not watched the Halo series yet. I heard it's just not good, so I don't know. I'm kind of letting people kind of sway me watching that or not.
Yeah, I watched the second episode from last week, and it's a weird happenstance where I both liked the show. Like, if you take away Halo and you just look at it as a show, I liked what was presented in episode two significantly more than episode one. Like, I could point someone that has no connection to Halo to episode two and say, hey, watch this. It's actually not a bad little sci-fi show.
Right.
As a Halo fan, it was the worst fucking nonsensical bullshit.
Right.
I have nothing good to say about it as a Halo show. It is borderline disrespectful, actively disrespectful to Halo and the lore and who Master Chief is.
Right.
It is.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. Like, and it's just, I'm not as hardcore of a Halo fan as y'all, but I still kind of like to know, because, like, I'm all about the lore, right? And from the sounds of it, it doesn't look like they took a lot of inspiration from what Halo, like, the original Halo was about. You know what I mean? That's what I wanted. Like, you know what I mean? I don't want someone else's take on it. I want what was the story originally.
Yeah. And they've made some just like, I'm going to give you two and then I'll flip it to you for Moon Knight. Cause I have a feeling you've probably watched Moon Knight, but I'm going to give you two, you and the listeners, two reasons why, or two examples as to why I think this is just sort of actively disrespectful garbage. Number one, you're not as big of a Halo fan, but you know who Master Chief is, right?
Oh, yeah.
You have a good feel for who Master Chief is, how he behaves, and what his mannerisms are.
Yeah.
Do you think in any situation on God's green earth that Master Chief would just in a moment lose his shit, throw someone up against the wall, and start screaming at them?
No.
No, absolutely not. Well, that happens in episode two.
Yeah, like that would be equivalent as to me watching a Batman movie and Batman just pull a gun out and shoot somebody.
Exactly.
Like that is just so out of character.
Yeah.
So
And I personally don't think that you can just sit there and say, well, look, we're making our own take on Halo. No, you can't just completely exist outside of what Halo and the Master Chief is.
Yeah, there has to be some loose connection.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you would like that Batman movie would flop. You know, No one would want that because that is not who Batman is. I mean, everybody likes playing with a darker Batman.
Yeah.
But we don't want him to suddenly become the Punisher.
Exactly.
God, exactly. You would just watch the fucking Punisher.
Right.
You know? And then example number two that's just so weird and just dumb is they're constant. The Covenant are constantly calling Master Chief Demon. And it's like they know him and they've already termed him as Demon. But where the show is taking place is like right at the start of the Covenant human skirmishes and battles that are taking place across the across the universe or across it's not really in the solar system, but across, you know. So like he's not destroyed a ring yet. He's not killed the prophets yet. He's not even really engaged with the Covenant on more than like a handful of skirmishes at this point, but yet they're calling him Demon.
So he hasn't even earned the title Demon from the Covenant yet, and they're just calling him that. That's kind of stupid.
It's like the I don't know. Audience, write in. Let me know what you think. But I personally, I'm so abundantly disappointed with what's happening with this show. But Moon Knight, have you watched Moon Knight?
I have watched Moon Knight, and so far I'm liking what I sing. I've never read a Moon Knight comic. I had no idea this guy existed until Kevin Feige announced his TV show. So I was going into it very, very blind, and from the looks of it, it looks like it's going to be a great show. I'm enjoying it. I haven't watched the newest one yet.
Okay. Sweet. Yeah, neither have I. I just watched episode one so far. Mm-hmm. I'm with you in that I didn't know anything about this character. No idea it existed until, because I didn't even see the reveal trailer. It was just like Jason messaged me and was like, hey, are you going to watch the new Moon Knight show? And I'm like, what is this? He's like, it's the next Marvel show. I'm like, I don't know how I missed this. No idea how I missed this.
Right.
I'm intrigued so far. I think it'll be a fun one to do some deep dives on it, and really talk and dissect through some of these episodes in the show once it's run its course. Right. So, all right, should we get into talking about some video games? I mean, that is what we are here to do.
Let's do it.
All right, because you know what? Each and every week we do get together to channel our virtues through the Triforce to provide you, the listener, all the hottest topics from the mythical world of video games. We also add in as much of our colorful thoughts and Philip monologues as you can handle in a week simply because we love video games and discussing them. If you like what you hear, please consider subscribing on your podcasting app of choice. And if you really enjoy it, please share on social media or directly with your friends. And please, if you really, really like it, please do get in there, rate us, leave a review. That definitely helps on the podcasting apps. This show continues to grow thanks to all of your wonderful support, and we cannot thank you enough for that support. You can find us on Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, all at TriCastGamingP1, and on our website, TriCastGamingPodcast.com. DM us on any platforms with your comments, questions, concerns. Be happy to share them on the show. All right, let's get into what we have been playing this week. Mike, I'm going to start because I've got two games, but the second game is what you're playing, is what the main topic of the show is, and it's just going to bleed all together. So let me just get this one out of the way first. I have been, I'm going to have to say it this way, I have been making myself get back into playing Forbidden West. Dude, this game is too dense. There's too much happening here. I think that I could be getting close to 80 to 90 hours by the time I finish this game.
Oh, it's my God.
Just too much in here. And I think what I've realized is I actually really don't find the combat that engaging. And when you have so much game here with a combat system that is not particularly fun, for me at least, that's a recipe for struggling to get through a game. Last night, after I got done playing Destiny with you guys, I did jump over to Horizon for a little bit, and I actually got myself kind of sucked in. I ended up going to bed at like 1 o'clock in the morning. So there are times when I can really get into a groove and kind of have fun with the game for a little bit, but there's a lot of times where I'm just like actively like, why the fuck am I still playing this? And that is, it's really hard to put my finger on exactly what it is. I would say even the story is not as interesting as the first one. I would say the combat, I've realized that the combat is just not that engaging. I think I like it in different spells, but there are certain robot enemies, there are certain machine enemies that you fight that I'm just like, these are just actively frustrating to fight. You know, that like to the point where like I'm like to I, in some instances I'm 10 or 15 levels above the rated level of that enemy and it's still frustrating to fight. You've got all these different weapon types in the game, and I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I've tried using them and I'm like, this is not effective or fun to use in combat against these machines. Like, I don't get how you're supposed to use them. I do like the different elemental arrow types. So I just basically load myself out with a bunch of different bows that has all the different elemental types so that, you know, whatever each machine is weak against, I can shoot that at them and get that stack and then switch to my main DPS arrows and just fire the DPS arrows and that's it. But like all the other types of weapons, I have tried and I cannot figure out how to use them. I mean, there's even like you go into certain combat scenarios where they force you to use it to complete a challenge. And I'm still just like, I don't fucking get it. Like I just don't think that they're well done, honestly. You know, there's like not a, you know how like in Destiny you have your kinetic, your energy weapon and your power weapon, right?
Right.
It's like they tried to create energy weapons and power weapons, but they don't really work or come off. And so I'm just like, I don't really have an energy and a power version. I just basically have a bunch of kinetics. Some of them fire different elemental types that I can stack. Like once you stack it, it does damage over time across the enemy until the stack runs out, and that's about it. And so, you know, you just basically spend most of your time, you know, scanning the, and here's the other thing, right? You scan the enemy and after a little bit of time, the scan goes away. So you have to rescan the enemy in the middle of the fight so that you can see its weak points pop up again.
That's which is stupid.
Which is so aggravating. So you find yourself in this cycle of scan the enemy, start shooting the arrows, but of course you want to slow down the time when you're shooting your arrows so you make sure you get it on target. And then the enemy runs out, so you scan the enemy again, and then you do the same thing. Oh, let me stack my buff. Okay, I'll switch to the poison arrows for like a couple minutes, fire a few of those, and then back to the same thing. And it's like, meanwhile, you're like dancing and flying yourself around the environment because some of these machines move so fast and have such wide-ranging attacks that you're just basically constantly trying to get out of the way. And you need distance because otherwise it's even more impossible to shoot your arrows. And your melee weapons don't really do enough against most of the bigger machines. So, yeah, I find the combat loop to just not be very fun. Right. And maybe that's controversial to some people. Maybe they've figured out weapons that I haven't, and that makes it fun for them. But I find myself not really that engaged by it. I don't find the story as good as the first one. Mm-hmm. And I think the big reason for that is that in the first game, it wasn't your active storyline that was really engaging to me. It was everything that had happened in the world before that had got it to where it was, you know, because it's a post-apocalyptic post-apocalyptic. Thank you. Story. You know, basically right. The world ends, right? And then you've got these new people. So right. It was the story about the old world that was really interesting to me. And of mm-hmm. course, all that's done now. You've basically learned that, or most of it. And so now you're about the story that's in the present, and it wasn't the strong part of Horizon 1, and I don't think it's very good here, mm-hmm. at least to me. And the other thing is I've actually run into quite a few bugs with this game. This is definitely one of the glitchiest PlayStation exclusives that I've run into. I had an incident last night where I tried to like jump onto a ladder, but the NPC like moved over next to it, and I basically got stuck between the ladder and the NPC, and there was nothing I could do. I had to like go back to an old save point.
Oh my gosh!
I've been trying to find like there's these roaming convoys of machines that you can like attack and gather resources from, and I was like looking at my map, and I was like, it's here. Where is it? And I would like come out of my map and run a little bit farther. And I'm like, I don't see anything. And I look at my map and like, I got to where I was basically on top of it. And then all of a sudden the fucking convoy just appeared in front of me. And the machines were like, "Ooh, look at you." And they tried to attack me. I'm like, what the hell just happened? It just,
that's like, a weird ass glitch. Yeah, it's not an online game. It's, nope. That's weird.
Just weird pop in like that. I've had situations where like you're watching cutscenes and like arms just fade through other arms, which is really weird looking. So basically like, or like the legs, they'll be setting their hands on their legs and it'll just basically fade through their legs, which is really weird to watch. A bunch of little things like that that make you go, you know, what happened here with this game? Because normally PlayStation games are so buttoned up. And so just a little bit odd there. I mean, nothing like game breaking, nothing horrible, but just enough to be noticeable. And normally, you know, people will talk about glitches and bugs in games and I'll be like, oh yeah, I guess I remember something like that, but never like actively acknowledge it while I'm playing it yet. With this one, there's stuff. I would also say that environmentally, I just don't find myself as engaged with it. Yeah, I don't know. I have a feeling, and it's weird because Horizon Zero Dawn is actually is one of my what I listed as one of my top five games of last generation, and so I actually really expected to like this one, and I find myself just, I don't know, actively disengaging from it. I think probably the amount of content is not helping. I mean, it's just too dense. Right. I've got to the point, because I like to try to do everything, that I've still got stacks of quests in my quest log, and they're all like 10 or 15 levels below where I'm at XP-wise. When that's happening, there's a problem, right, with what you've stacked in your game.
Right.
And yeah, I don't know, man. I think one of the things I really liked about the first one, you know, I did everything. I platinumed that game. It was like 50 to 55 hours. I was like, this is the perfect length of game. You know, I'm already at 50 hours in this game. And I think I'm a little more than halfway. Jeez. You know, I've meandered from the story too much. You know, that was one of my big complaints about Assassin's Creed Valhalla, is you spend too long away from the story that you forget what's happening, right?
Right.
So yeah, I don't know. I'm pretty down on this game, and I'm sorry to everybody that really likes this one. You know, I will finish it. I will see it through. I will get my platinum trophy. But I think that I'm trending pretty down on this game at this point in time now, after the amount of time I put into it. Which is funny, because I think after, like, I was down on it after the first 10 hours, then I was really high on it after about 25 to 30 hours, and now I'm really down on it again after 50 hours. So, I don't know, maybe it'll recover at some point. I don't know.
Maybe you'll figure out some weapon systems that you just completely missed.
Yeah, maybe. That would be good. That would be good. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get off of that. Let's get into what we really came here to talk about. I'm just going to kind of go ahead and push us into the main topic of the show, because the main topic of the show is what we've been playing a lot of and what we want to go into deep, and that's Destiny 2. Destiny 2 Witch Queen specifically. So, Mike, I'm going to flip it to you first. Just kind of your general thoughts on the game right now. And then I kind of want to drive us into a bit of a review discussion about the Witch Queen expansion.
Right.
You know, really kind of talk about the story, spoil things if we want to, like just give people warning on that and just really kind of talk about this in detail. And then once we get through that, I want to kind of go into what's next, you know, how we feel the game state is right now, and what we're hoping happens next. So, let's go to you first.
Well, overall, like, the campaign is probably one of the, I'm going to say it's probably the best campaign, in the game so far, just because of the legendary option. It just makes it to where you're not like, it's not just, you're not just shooting shit. Like, there is some type of coordination and your deaths matter. So you're trying to be more careful. You're just playing a little more cautiously and kind of try to be strategic on getting through. So the campaign is like one of the, it's the best as far as Destiny is concerned. There are some other stuff that, the PsyOps is just another, the PsyOps battleground is just another a seasonal thing. And for me, like, this is like, the way I'm viewing this is going to be different for you. Because, like, I've been playing every single season. So I know, like, the way it's going to go. I know, like, every season there's going to be an activity with some dripping story throughout the week. And then just going to be grinding for weapons.
Yeah, so, see, I actually didn't know that. So I feel I need something I need to catch up on. I figured this out today that like you said, there's like a progressing story throughout the season. I had no idea.
Yeah. It's kind of confusing now because a whole new like expansion launched with it. So you're like you're just deep into the campaign and stuff, and then you're done there, and then your map opens up, and it's so easy to miss the seasonal stuff. Unless I think it kind of directs you to that if you kind of pay attention to your quest log, but it's going to be easy to miss, especially if you're not used to it. So I was used to it, so I know, okay, there's a new season, there's a new activity, that's where the story is for the season. It's slightly connected to the, it's completely connected, actually, to the main Witch Queen story. So I kind of like knew to look for it, essentially. Gotcha. But yeah, that seasonal activity is, it's fun. It's similar to this season activities before. You just go through, kill shit, and then after it's over, you loot boxes. One is free. One you have to pay currency for that you get throughout the season. And then after that's over, you are getting that drip feed of a story. So that is like, it is what it is. It's not good or bad. It's just part of the Destiny seasonal content. As far as other aspects, they changed Gambit. I am not Gambit has always been broken. Like, it's never, it's fun if you have a good team and you can like just coordinate and get your most deposited and burn down the boss. For a while, after a while, it just gets boring. I go in through my, do my three games and I leave. I'm like, I don't have to win. Thank God. And the changes they made, I feel like it extends the Primeval boss fight. Like, we played with your dad a few nights ago, and those boss fights didn't last long. It's just mainly because we weren't really coordinating all that hardcore. But if we have two really good teams, that Primeval fight could last like 30 minutes because you have good people constantly invading each other and just refilling the health bars.
Right. And they added the gates now to do damage.
So so it's just, they tried to fix it. It did not work. I think it made it worse. They tried to fix it also by giving everybody heavy per, like, so like anytime you cleared a section for moat, like where the ads are, you would go and it would like spawn a heavy box that everybody can go loot.
Right.
And it does that. It feeds you heavy all throughout the game. So like now everybody has heavy. I think Bungie was thinking that'll fix it. Like, no, it didn't do shit. So Bungie's still not that great. Or not Bungie, Gambit. Is not that great. Crucible, still Crucible. It feels like they've just neglected it, mainly because it seems kind of difficult to balance everything around all the exotics and all that, especially when, like, a new season comes out. There's always a new exotic, a new weapon. It's just they are doing their best, I believe, and it's not in a bad spot as far as PvP. I just avoid it, and I just do it just to get my pinnacle. There will be times when I have to, like, I really want to grind it for some, like the shader or something. And, like, if I grind it enough, I'll start getting a little bit better, a little bit better. But then after I'm done doing what I'm doing, I just kind of step away from it. So Crucible is not really my thing. I really dive into it with Iron Banner, though, just to get the pinnacle stuff.
Yeah, I was reading that it's been 900 days since the last new Crucible map. Is that true?
Yeah, last time they had a Crucible, I think, was... A Crucible map was, I think, Shadowkeep, if I'm not mistaken.
That definitely feels like it's been neglected. I mean, 900 days.
And it's not even, they weren't even new. They were just brought back from Destiny 1.
that's wild. I did read that they've already announced that with the next season, they are bringing one new map. So I guess they're finally starting to bring something to the table. But that just seems crazy. I mean, I don't want to say I don't care, because I know that the game as a whole is meant for a lot of different players. But for me personally, like, I don't even want to go in there to get my gear. Like, I just do not want
to play. Yeah, there are weeks when I just let it go. I don't try to do it.
Now, Gambit is a little bit more disappointing that it's... Yeah, I was reading that is, like, seemingly the one thing that all Destiny players are locked in together on, that it's broken, and probably broken to the point of they need to just sunset it, which is kind of sad, because I liked the idea of Gambit being someone that really dislikes PvP. I actually really do kind of enjoy the flow of Gambit matches. So it is disappointing to me to hear that it is so broken. That's pretty sad, honestly. Yeah.
I mean, I enjoy, like, when it first came out during Shadowkeep, what was it? Forsaken. I was just like, that is all I did. I loved that game type. And then after a while, people found it, like, they just, like, would hoard their heavy and invade and just take you out. And it's just, after a while, it just stopped being fun. And then they did the Gambit Prime, which kind of fixed it a little bit. They took it from 3 rounds to 1. Kind of essentially what it is now. And I really like that, mainly because you had that armor that kind of buffed what you wanted to do. So you had, like, your guardian, like, your invader set, your clear ads set and all that. And it really added a cool little dynamic to it. But then they got rid of that, and it is what it is now. And I do like that they added a freelance game list. Like you can queue with other non-grouped people now. So you don't go in against other teams. You just go in, everybody's solo.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Certainly if you got teams that are sweaty about this. I didn't, again, so this shows you kind of how out of, like, hardcore Destiny I've been. I didn't realize that there were now heavy weapons that would locate enemies for you. So those became the meta for Gambit, and basically you'd hoard the heavy ammo, you'd invade, you would know where everybody was already, and you could just take them out with your heavy ammo. That does seem to, like, really fucking break it, especially when you do that during the primeval phase, and the primeval, as you said, regens health. That's really, and of course, I guess that's really still going on now, because Bungie thought that solving this would be, well, just give everybody heavy ammo and then you can deal with it. But the problem is that you are still at the disadvantage of, you do not know where the invader came in.
Exactly.
The invader knows where you are, though.
Yeah. And see, what they thought they were fixing it by randomizing where they put the invader to. Whereas, like, before, there was a better idea where their invader was. Cause, like, if you are on one side of the map clearing ads and you hear invader, they will almost always be at the opposite end. So, like, if you're on one side, they're going to be at the other. Like, if you are all, like, if you're at looking at spawn, looking out to the front area where they that's spawn, they're going to be where the spawn is. Like, they're always in the opposite, so you can know where to look. But now they've made it random to where it could be anywhere. So they made it even more difficult to locate the invader.
That's, yeah, I don't know. That's concerning decision making there. But
yeah,
I mean, Well, I guess carry on. I mean, I pulled you back. You were talking about Crucible, but carry on from there.
That's pretty much all I had, really. Well, there is the I've completely forgot Void 3.0. I'm really enjoying it, and it's something they're really focusing on now this season. Even if you look at your relic, there's like mods that like really push you to use Void. Right. It's the fun subclass right now, and that's what they want you to use. They've worked really hard on it. Like, yes, please play this. We worked a year on this or two, but yeah. But you'll see, like, next season, you'll see that kind of those mods kind of go away, and people kind of like start moving away slightly from the Void 3.0. You'll start seeing hunters use stasis again and all that. But
yeah, I mean, that's so I've seen a lot of chatter. Coming up to the show, I told you this is what I want to talk about. So I started looking at a lot of different stuff, and I was trying to look at good and bad approaches, because I heard a lot of like, this is the best Destiny 2 has ever been. And by the way, for the listeners, I'm totally distracted because about 5-10 minutes ago, almost, something happened to your camera. It's gone completely black and I can't see your face anymore. I just want you to know that. Oh, there it is. It's back. Oh, now it's gone again. I don't know what you did there. You like covered your camera on me. Yeah, totally distracting. So I did a bunch of research on the game, and I saw people coming at this from a couple different ways. And some people are lamenting the fact that basically everybody's using Void now. It kind of really disincentivizes people using any of the other classes. And I understand that to a point, but Bungie have committed to saying that we are going to redo every subclass. So I suspect we're all going to be playing a lot of Void, and then the next season comes out and we're all going to be playing a lot of, it sounds like the general thought is Ark is going to be next. So we're all going to be playing a lot of Ark, and then the next season is going to come out and we're all going to be playing a lot of Solar, and then season 4 is going to come out, which is going to be the long one before the next expansion, and they're probably just going to basically dump artifacts for or mods for all three of them, and you're going to see people just drifting to what they liked the most throughout this seasonal content, this year of content. And so, like, I get that it can be disheartening, I guess, to see everybody using Void right now, but I think it's a good way of getting everybody trying out the new, you know, retooled subclasses, and then when you get to the end, you'll know the ins and outs of all of them, and you'll just get to pick what you like, and that's when you'll see a lot of your variety in it. And I think that's a good thing, honestly. I mean, I don't know. I really like it. I like how powerful you've gotten. I know that some people are really down on the fact that you can just melt things if you really tool the subclass correctly with your mods and your weapons, but I don't know. I think that I just enjoy that. I enjoy, going out into the different pieces of content, and just being able to
wrecking everything.
a lot of fun.
That's what I enjoy too. And you shared a video earlier today by SkillUp, and he was talking about that exactly, and he made a lot of good points, and I agree with him on about like 95% of it. And one of his main things was like, there's too much of us just ripping through the strike playlist. Like, it's like you're not killing things. You're just running through and just AOEing with Void 3.0. You don't have to like stop. Just run, get to the boss and melt the boss.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's how Destiny's always been for the past 4 years. It's not nothing new with the Witch Queen. It's always, you were always able to do that. Especially if you like, if it was a solar burn I think it's called Heavyweight, where your power weapon does more damage. And so let's say if it's solar burn with Heavyweight, everybody has on a solar heavy, and we're just going to go straight to the boss and just burn the boss. That's always been a thing. That's not new with Witch Queen.
Yeah, that's, you know, again, so I should have caveated up front that I have been out since like the very early days of Beyond Light. I basically played the Beyond Light campaign and fell off it almost immediately afterwards.
Right.
So I've been away from the game for, I mean, so basically the entire Beyond Light season or whatever, which should have lasted a year, but then got drug on about 4 or 5 more months because of the delay of the release of Witch Queen. So, right. I mean, we're talking almost a year and a half I've been away from the game. And so I saw that and I was like, honestly, that's how it always used to feel like to me. But what was worse was that as a player that can't devote their time into getting all of the big weapons from the raids and stuff, I was always just kind of left behind. Whereas now, with Void 3.0, I can actually contribute to the melting of everything because, you know, up front, I can kind of already start tooling myself to being powerful. And so, yeah, I guess I feel like you can solve that with a retweak of the strike playlist rather than saying that, oh, Void 3.0 is bad because it makes you too powerful.
Right. No, I do agree with Skillup when he said that there needs to be a legendary version of the strike playlist. There definitely needs to be, because yes, I mean, it's a blast blade, like just ripping through those strikes, but like sometimes there's like, all right, I kind of want to do a challenge, and the Nightfalls are great, but I feel like I can still rip through those, unless it's a Grandmaster, which I have not even touched a Grandmaster since they even released a Grandmaster version of the Nightfalls,
right?
Just because I don't have the team to do it. But yeah, like there does need to be a legendary version of the strikes for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the heroic playlist because you used to run through the regular playlist and then the heroic playlist for gear. And I understand kind of collapsing it down and how they've done it, but, you know, I think because you want something that you can actually work on bounties through. And that's, I think, what he was trying to get at. Skillup in his video is that
very annoying.
You basically can't complete bounties through the strikes because you know it's too easy to kill everything.
Because like you go to like you need like today I was playing and I needed to kill things with a pulse rifle. And I just like, all right, I'm gonna put, like, I just had a random one, I'm like, I'll put this on, and it wasn't like tuned or anything. So like it would take me almost a full clip to kill something. And then, like, by the time I'd get it down to almost nothing, friggin' a warlock or a hunter would come through with his shit and just, like, everything would melt. I'm like, well, so I got to run ahead of everybody and try to kill, like, 4 or 5. But, yeah, that is very annoying, is trying to complete some bounties that way.
Yep, for sure. Other thoughts on Void 3.0? I mean, as far as my understanding of how they've retweaked it, I guess I'm struggling because it feels like it's just all of the little tweaks and mods and pieces you can add to your subclass. That's what 3.0 is, right? It's not really that there's anything new that you're doing with the subclass. It's just how you're able to build your
character. There's new stuff. Cause like I can now, I mean, everybody can now, like anytime I kill somebody, like if I like tag somebody with a void dot and I kill them with this dot on them, it'll explode and put the dot on anybody else. And then it just kind of ripples from there. So, but everybody has that ability. I don't think you've talked to Ikora yet. Have you unlocked more fragments?
No, I have no
you
idea.
You have to go talk to
no,
Ikora.
No, I have. No, I know what you're talking about. I have done that. Yes. Okay. Yes, I have done that. But that's what I'm getting at is that I know that you have the fragments. I know that that's new, but it's not like my super is new. It's not like my grenade is new. It's what I do with those pieces and how I bring them all together with my gear and my void weapons. Mm-hmm. That's what's new.
Yeah.
And I would think that that should just be that should just be fun to people in building their character and, and looking for their different roles and things like that.
The thing is you and I are not like min-maxers. Like, we're not trying to like build the most optimal void build. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we're not seeing that as well as any, like those other people are that, that play like that. And I am fine not doing that because I have my own play style and I like focus more on my guns. And kind of like the only thing I use on my subclass is my, like, what I really rely on is a grenade. And that's pretty much it. Like, I don't really build anything around like just wiping ads out completely. Like, I like to use my gun. And right now, the game is leaning more towards you using your subclass to do almost everything. And I'm just kind of like, okay, I could do that, but I don't play like that. So I'm going to use my guns more. So that's, I'm not melting things as optimally as the game allows me to. So,
but even that, there are ways to tweak what you're doing with your artifact mods to your gear and your void weapons. And you're kind of able to link some of that to make your weapons more powerful.
Yeah.
If you want to play that. And that's, I mean, that's the thing is that you kind of have to ask, and I'm not a dev, and so I don't really have to make these decisions, but I get that they would be difficult decisions is, you know, the people that are making videos, the people that are talking about the game the most are probably your hardcore, and they're probably the people min-maxing a lot, right?
Oh, yeah.
So do you cater to them because they're vocal, or do you cater to what is probably, you know, 50 to 70% of your game population, people like you and I, that aren't really doing that and are actually now getting a taste of what it's like to build powerful builds because it's a little bit more accessible for us to be able to do that and get something out of that without like totally, you know, killing ourselves over the game, you know, and how and the time we put into it and how we min-max things.
I think the developers are looking like everybody that's within the bell curve. You know what I mean? They're going to cater to those people the most just because that is their gamers.
That, I mean, and that would make the most sense, you know, for sure. I guess there were a couple notes that I guess I wanted to say. First of all, on the good side, I've heard a lot of people say good things about the Legendary campaign. I personally have not played it at Legendary yet. It's something I want to do with you guys. I just haven't gotten there yet. But I think there were things that I got out of it that were really interesting, even with it not being a Legendary campaign, which helped me realize that this was a lot better than most of them. The fact that you have eight strong levels, and that's what gets you through the campaign. A lot of the old Destiny campaigns, you'd have one or two levels, and then it'd be like, oh, go farm this shit in our new play space that we built for this expansion, and do this meaningless shit, and then, oh, okay, now you're on to the next part of the campaign, and there'd be like another couple levels, and then it'd be the same thing, and then there'd be another couple levels, and then the game would be over. No, this is just like a pretty dedicated, like, eight strong levels that you just play through and that's your campaign. So that's really good. No filler, no BS this time. And that's really good. And then the levels are really cool. There's a lot of mechanics introduced into the various levels. Now there is one puzzle that's really freaking annoying in the world where you go to view the projections or the memories.
How long did it take you to figure that out?
Dude, I still never figured it out.
I can still, tell you. It's so
I still
easy.
Do not know what I'm supposed to be.
You're just randomly shooting
looking.
Little things, right? Yeah. What you do is you look for the differences because there's six like little signs there, right? And they all have four of those little sigils. Well, if you pay attention, they all look the same except for a couple of them. And you shoot the ones that don't look, that don't match, essentially.
See, that's what I assumed was the answer. But even then, I could never like, I still couldn't see whatever pattern that was, but I was, And I like environmental puzzles in games. I fucking couldn't figure that out. That was the only thing that was annoying to me.
It took me forever to figure it out.
Yeah. I mean, it, the one where it's like the three or four platforms and you go and you look at the ones around the platform and you figure out the one that one I figured out easily. It's just the one that's just the wall of rows of characters that I was like, I have no idea.
It's essentially the same thing. That yeah, wall I, one is supposed to it show it kind of shows you how to figure out the other puzzles.
So. Yeah, well, apparently I'm dumb or something. I don't know.
That's hilarious.
But I think it's cool that they have really realized that pulling out some of the raid mechanics and mm-hmm. putting them in the rest of their activities.
Yeah.
You see it in the campaign this time. Mm-hmm. This is the first time that I got to play a dungeon, the Dungeon of Avarice. Because I never played any, I'm assuming there were other dungeons in the Beyond Light seasons. Mm-hmm. I never touched any of those. So the dungeons are basically raids, but for three people.
It's a mini raid.
Yeah. I think that's really smart of Bungie to realize that pulling some of those pieces out and putting them in the rest of their activities is a good mm-hmm. idea. Mm-hmm. So that's really cool. Those are kind of like the things that I picked out about the campaign that I was like, yes, I get that I'm not playing it on Legendary and everybody is hyping this campaign because they played it on Legendary and the difficulty is so perfect and yada, yada. I get it. I didn't play it on Legendary, but yet I still found a lot to like about that campaign. So awesome. Just wanted to shout out some of those things. Some of the things on the bad side that I do actually want to highlight. Savathun's throne world is garbage. There are no fucking enemies in it. The heroic events are dog easy.
Like there's nothing new. There's no new heroic event. It's all the same.
Yeah.
And we've experienced them all before.
It's just, there's no new enemies in there. I don't understand why it's so barren and so much of a seemingly waste of time. I mean, I get that the Lost Sectors have different versions of it that are super hard and you can play those for gear, but like it is not good.
There's not a lot going on there. There's really not.
It's way more fun to go to like the Cosmodrome or one of the other areas because there's actually more enemies and stuff going on there at least.
But
they want you to go to Savathun's Throne World and do stuff for that Finch character, the hive ghost. And even that's like, dude, I can't tell you this. I actually legitimately dislike kind of how boring it is to go and fiddle around in that world to gain reputation to get your piece of gear for that.
Yeah. I remember I had a bounty for him to get headshots on Scorn. And it took me 45 minutes. because only six would spawn at a time.
Yeah.
And I would kill them and I have to wait. And then sometimes I would miss my headshots, which is very annoying. And then it just took so long.
Yeah, I think Skill Up said something like it's a pre-build for the world and there's just a few enemies placed so that they know where to do enemy encounters when they finish it.
But then they forgot to put the enemies in.
Yeah, I don't know. It's rough. So I definitely
agree with you there, though.
That is bad. And it seems like something they could easily fix, but it's bad right now.
Yeah.
And then the second thing I wanted to point out is weapon crafting or weapon customization. Mm-hmm. I know that I haven't dabbled into it much, but I'm already like, what the fuck is this? Why do I have so many different currencies? Why do I have these drops that I didn't have to use this weapon that I don't want to use because I want to be working on this other weapon that I actually crafted and I'm trying to level up, but now I've got to use this other weapon so that I can get its little thing so I can get the materials out of it because I can't just collect the materials somewhere else. And then I got to go to this other place and I have to craft this weapon, but I'm not really crafting anything. I'm just picking perks, but I've got to unlock the other perks by doing this. Like, what the fuck, man? I get that you can essentially ensure that you get the quote God roll if you put enough time into it, but it's confusing. It is off-putting to even someone that's kind of experienced to Destiny, but is new coming back to it. I don't like it. I really don't. And I know that there's been a lot of complaints about it and Bungie have already come out and said that they're trying to retool it for the next season. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that they can fix it, but I'm like, what the fuck with this thing? I don't know why they did
so
that.
So what's funny is like they have something similar to this with the armor. It's not armor crafting. It's like your Umbral engrams. So you can go and pick a piece of armor that has a stat favored. So let's say you want to work on building up your grenade recharge, right? So you go and you pick the armor that has, what is it, strength, to have higher strength, and you make that armor and you have a piece of armor that has higher strength. It's easy as that. You just have to have an umbral engram and some of the seasonal currency, and that is it.
Yeah.
This is something similar to that, except it's so convoluted.
Yeah.
And the amount of currencies is insane. Like, I remember they talked about, this is like a few years, like probably a year ago. I think it was whenever Shadowkeep came out. They're talking about, okay, we're going to do it with a bunch of currencies. And then they go and add, what, 10 different currencies for each different perk?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is like,
and I haven't run into this, but what I was listening to on some of these higher level players when I was watching their videos is they're saying that there's caps. You can't even hold the currency.
No.
So you have to do the 100% of the weapon drop, mm-hmm. and then you have to store them in your vault.
Yeah, so you can go back
and then pull them out and deconstruct them when you need the currency. I'm like, what the like, seriously? This is, and I don't know. Personally, I don't think that there's any way that they didn't know it was a problem before they released it.
I just had to probably just get the game out, and they're like, okay, well, this is something we'll have to fix later.
Yeah. Just crazy, crazy, crazy. And then the one last thing I want to say that is a big I do not like, mm-hmm. with the Witch Queen, they sunsetted the Red War campaign. So the original, whatever, Forsaken expansion?
The Red War was sunsetted last season.
They've sunsetted Forsaken. Forsaken. Okay.
Yeah.
I have a big problem with sunsetting the campaigns. I understand rolling dungeons and raids and some stuff like that.
Right.
I even understand rolling some of the worlds. And then I get that because you've rolled the world, you now have to roll the campaign.
Right.
But I just do not... The fact that there will be some day where Destiny will end, and yet there will be content that I just could never... I could never go back and just play the campaign of Destiny through again, I think is a problem. I really dislike that. Especially Forsaken, because Forsaken is probably, from a story perspective at least, the most impactful emotional part of everything that's happened in Destiny 2 so far.
Yeah.
In Destiny, period, actually. Mm-hmm. The breaking up of the Vanguard, the death of Cade, all of that. It's just so important, and it's gone. You can't play it.
Yeah, it's... I understand that they need their resources dedicated to other parts of the game, but like there needs to be a way we can bring those campaigns back, because like that is your story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't, like, I don't know. Maybe, like, I don't know, this might be, I'm not a developer, so this might not even be possible. Like, but what if, like, there's a whole separate game just for the Destiny campaigns? Like, it's not part of the main game. You just, you can go buy some discs, plug it in, and you play it disconnected from the online game, which is stupid to even think about having to do.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's sad.
I would even be like, listen, I don't care. I will put a 250 gig Destiny install in if I have to. Just let me be able to play the whole thing from start to finish again.
Right.
Anyway. So that's kind of it for me. Mm-hmm. I wrote a lot of notes. I've covered everything. Anything else that you want to say before we move on out of Destiny? I have a feeling we're going to be coming back to Destiny frequently. So buckle up, folks. I hope that you're okay with this.
Main thing is, like, for you is if you really are planning on sticking this out for like the next like few months, it's going to be, you'll see kind of like some repetition, and it'll probably like get you away from the game. Cause like right now it's like you are in on a new expansion and season. So you have all this content, right?
Right.
Whenever the new season comes out, like you're not going to see the PsyOps Battleground anymore. It'll be a new activity with a whole new list of rewards and some drip feed story, and that's going to be it. So don't expect this every season. Like, it'll be just the seasonal activity, and then that is it. They may make some changes like here and there, but it's not going to be anything massive until the next expansion comes out.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, dude, I've never been so into Destiny that I got through everything and then was able to, like, focus on trying to get through triumphs and stuff like that.
Right.
So I see there's no way that I'll never have something to do here.
Right.
And
well, I mean, you still have a bunch of catch-up because you still haven't done... There's three other dungeons that you hadn't even touched that we can go do.
Yeah, there's so much I haven't even tried. So I just see it, and the fact that I don't consume the game at the level that some people do, because I am still, you know, I probably played 4 hours of video games yesterday, and half of it was in Horizon and half of it was in Destiny.
Okay.
Right? So I don't think that I consume things on the level that other people do, so I think it'll be okay for me. But
right on.
You know, here's the thing, and maybe this is part of why Horizon, I'm so down on it right now, is that even when I'm doing something like running around Savathun's Throne World, which I actively think is boring, right. I'm having way more fun because just the active combat engagement is so right. much more fun.
Right.
You know, and that's the thing. Like, if it's just fun to do what you're doing, then I think it's going to be fine.
Yeah, that's exactly why I love Destiny, just because of the game, the gunplay. And I feel like I am a god.
That's right. Yeah. So. I like just being powerful. That's kind of important.
Yep.
All right. Let's get into the new speedrun. There isn't a whole lot here, but this first topic is a bit big. What I want to do is I want to read some of these quotes and I want to talk about them just a little bit. So let's get right on into it. So PlayStation boss Jim Ryan has confirmed that Sony has more acquisitions planned beyond its recent buyouts of Bungie and Haven. The exec also reiterated why Sony has decided not to include day one releases in its new subscription offering, like Xbox Game Pass does, claiming that such a setup would damage the quality of its games. So he went on the PlayStation podcast, the official PlayStation podcast, and he was interviewed by in-house people. So, right, this is all, you know, this is softballs lobbed for him to just knock out of the park, right?
Right.
But what he said is really interesting, and I want to read a couple of these quotes, and I want to talk about some of this to kind of break through some of the messaging that he's got going here. So first off, let's look at what he talked about, you know, in terms of expansions. He says, "We're in a really good place with PlayStation Studios and have been for the past few years. The critical success and the commercial success of the games that they've been making, that has given us permission to invest heavily in content creation." So let's start with this. I actually think that there's a lot of truth here. PlayStation Studios have been killing it for a few years. Their games have done very well critically and very well commercially. And I think that he's actually probably telling you a lot of truth here in that by saying that has given us permission to invest heavily in content creation. So he's basically saying that PlayStation is doing so good that Papa Sony is like, yeah, you guys are rolling in bank for us. You can keep doing what you're doing. So I think there's a lot of truth in that quote. He goes on then to say, "We're growing our studios organically and we're growing through acquisition. We acquired 5 studios during the course of 2021. We're in discussions with Bungie and we have more planned. This is getting us into a virtuous cycle where success begets success." And this is where I think he starts devolving a little bit, okay? He says, "We're growing organically. We're growing studios organically." I actually think that's pretty true. And we're growing through acquisition. So by organically, he's saying the stuff we already have in-house, we are investing in them and building them up more, giving them more talent, more teams, more resources, and that's helping them do better. I think that's pretty true.
Yeah.
And then he's saying we're going through acquisition. Again, I can't argue that. They have definitely bought quite a few studios. 5 studios during the course of 2021, you know, and they're planning to buy Bungie. So I think this is true as well, but this is where I think he's starting to devolve the getting us into virtuous cycle where success begets success. I think this is the start of playing into fanboy language. I think he knows what his base believes and he's saying what he knows they're going to latch onto, because right. I want proof that your virtuous cycle is true. How do you say that success begets success in the gaming industry, where I would argue you have a big dud that launched in Gran Turismo 7. Mm-hmm. You have a game in Horizon Forbidden West that, you know, I know a lot of people like, but critically, it didn't quite crunch the way that people thought it would. Right. And I would argue that they've just loaded it more like a Ubisoft game than ever. So I don't know. I guess I don't understand this sentiment. I don't get what he means by, success begets success. I don't think that that's just a guarantee. I think you have to prove that at each level, at each release of a game. I think you can start to go bad. I think studios like or publishers like Ubisoft have shown us that you can start to go bad on your games. You can recover. You can go bad again. And just because you have one really good game or two really good games or even five really good games, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're just guaranteed into some virtuous cycle where you just keep going.
You keep making good games. That's a awful mindset to get into, because then you kind of start, you lose your hunger, I guess, to make a good game. You're like, oh, that's going to be a good game. Our next game's going to be good. They're going to love it. Like, no, you have to actually be critical of it and be like, okay, let's see what we have here. Otherwise, you're just going to like start putting out garbage.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. If you get to the point that you're resting a little too easy, and this is, you know, we talked about this 2 years ago when I was like, hey, I'm a little bit unsure about this idea of like, well, we need to make a Horizon 2 and a God of War 2 and a Last of Us 3, and we need to remaster Last of Us 1 again, and we need to put Uncharted games out again. And it's like, okay, I know those games were good, but I think you're missing the fact that a lot of people said Sony really broke ground last generation, because not only did they have really good additions in core franchises, but they had really good additions in new IP, in Days Gone and Ghost of Tsushima and the new Spider-Man role, and how they redid God of War, and Horizon was a new IP. Like, they really broke ground there as well. And if you lose sight of the fact that you need both of those happening, then this is where I'm worried about, what does he mean by success begets success? Is he saying like Uncharted is big, so we do it bigger, and then it gets bigger, and then we do it bigger again, and it gets bigger? Like, or is he saying that by doing a really good game, I can go make this other game now, and that could start to get bigger as well? If he's not doing that, if he's not using success to build up new stuff on the side, then you're losing sight of why PlayStation was so strong last generation. So anything else on this, or should I go to the next quote?
What's the next quote?
So then he goes on to talk about why they cannot release day one releases in a new subscription offering. And this is where, again, you know, starting to talk to your base and saying stuff like virtuous cycle where success begets success is starting to get a little bit dangerous. So here we go. The next quote: the games that we make are getting bigger. They're getting better. They're getting more beautiful. They're getting richer. The narrative is getting stronger. This is really great. And gamers tell us that this is what they really want from PlayStation. Now I have to say, and this is where, he says, now I have to say, and now I'm saying, this is where he starts putting these quotes together. And you're going to see where this is dangerous talk. Now, I have to say, putting these games into a subscription service immediately upon their release would break this virtuous cycle, and we wouldn't be able to invest in the way that we currently are able to. So we're not doing it. We're going to stick to the approach that we have and has served us well under many years now. So the problem I have with this statement is he's saying we are in a virtuous cycle where success begets success. We get better, and then we get better, and then we get better. Mm-hmm. And the only reason that we're able to do this is because we don't put our games into a subscription service. So now you're basically taking exactly what the worst of the worst on Twitter are saying, and you're just saying it in a better you know, sort of corporate-y way.
Right.
Where you're essentially pointing a finger at Xbox and saying, they're never going to be as good as our games because they do this. And that service is never going to be good. Those games are never going to be good compared to ours, because the reason why we make these really great games is because we don't do this one thing. And I think that that is a bunch of bullshit. It really is, because one piece does not hinge all of your success of your games. There's right. so much more that goes into it.
Right.
And by trying to link these two things together, you're actually kind of playing into the worst of the worst console wars that's out there.
Yeah, that's it's just, that's shitty. That's like, why? That has no, there's no reason for your games to get worse because you put them on a subscription. That, like, to say that that is going to make the quality of your games go down because you have it on a subscription is insane to me.
Yeah, I mean, I can accept that there is a reality where you're like, well, this is a subscription service. We're going to shotgun a lot of stuff out there and just see what sticks. Mm-hmm. I could accept that's potentially a reality, but it's not true to say that every game that's put on a subscription model or every show that's put on a subscription model is just inherently bad because it's on a subscription model. Okay, he didn't say it's inherently bad. Fair enough. Not inherently as good as this other thing. Whatever right. way you want to put it. I don't really care. He's effectively trying to say that PlayStation is better than Xbox and always will be simply because they're not embracing subscription services. So he's feeding into this mindset that, well, we don't want subscription service on our console because if we get subscription service, then we're going to get shittier games. So he's basically convincing you to say, I don't want a consumer-friendly model because if I get that, then suddenly it's I'm gonna just going to get shittier games.
Wow. Okay. So, like, they're going to have Ghost of Tsushima on their PlayStation Plus shit, right?
Yes.
So now that's a shitty game, according to his quote here.
Well,
like, it's okay. going to diminish the quality. Right?
Only if they released it day and date.
What is the difference? What is the difference? Like, why is the quality going to go down if they release it day one as opposed to a year from then? Like, the quality that's changed is probably like the amount of money you're going to get up front.
Yeah. He's basically saying, because I'm not going to get 13 million sales at $70.
Right.
Or realistically, what you get is like 3 to 6 million sales in that mm-hmm. first 6 week to 8 week period, because I'm not getting that income level right. at each launch. Suddenly my games are going to get crappier because I can't fund them to the same level. My argument to that is, how many PlayStation, like big AAA PlayStation exclusives, do they release per year? 3-4 maybe mm-hmm. in a good year. If you're charging people upfront every year the price of 2 full price exclusives mm-hmm. to be in your subscription service. Are you seriously telling me that every PlayStation player buys all 4 of those or all 3 of those?
Right.
No, they buy 1 or 2 of them. So if you guarantee upfront at the start of every year that they're paying you the price of 2 full new release games, I hear commentators say, subscription services don't work. You just bleed money. I've never seen anybody actually show me how that's true.
Right.
Now, if you do like Xbox and you're just constantly offering the service for $1 or you offer it to them in a monthly fee and so they can pay per month and that I guess I can see. But if mm-hmm. you set up your service that you say, look, we're a yearly subscription service. You mm-hmm. pay this much. Do an Amazon.
Yeah.
You pay this much per year and then you can be in our subscription service.
Right.
I don't see how you would lose.
Because that's guaranteed. That's a guaranteed sale. Like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because there may be a year where somebody doesn't want to buy any of the PlayStation games.
Yeah.
But they still have that subscription service.
Yeah.
That's just, so, I wish they would have asked him to expand on what he meant by that. But yeah, of course they didn't.
Yeah, of course. Of course not.
God, it's so shitty. Like, why are you, like, stop. I hate the console war bullshit, dude. I hate it so much.
And Jim Ryan has a real history of this, right? When the first the consoles were first kind of announced, and Xbox said that they were going to continue supporting Xbox One, you know, 12 to 18 months into the console lifecycle, right. What did Sony immediately come out? What did Jim Ryan immediately come out and say afterwards? We believe in generations. He didn't straight up say, oh, you know, Xbox sucked because of this. He made that very pointed statement that everybody who knows what's going on knew exactly what he meant. And guess what? It was a fucking lie, too. Because they turned around and put all of their exclusives on PlayStation 4 because they knew they couldn't make enough PS5s and they weren't going to get the sales they needed.
Yeah. That's, I hate, like, just stop pandering to that bullshit. Just give us an honest answer on why you're not going to put your new games day one on your subscription. You know what I mean? Like, it's,
yeah.
Unless it's just a shitty, even if it's a shitty reason, just don't even say the quote. Don't even, like, mention it. It's just, oh, God. Now I'm pissed.
Yeah. I'm with you. Like, this is really frustrating to me that he keeps doing this and he keeps playing into the people that want to believe this. They want to believe that Xbox Game Pass is bad because they know a bunch of people are getting a lot of good value out of it and are kind of drifting to Xbox. So they want to believe that Game Pass is bad.
Right.
And so he's just telling them what they need to hear so that they'll try to believe that. And I he's already said in another quote that, you know, they'll reevaluate in the future if they have to. So the reality is, if that you came out as a PlayStation fan and said, no, this is not good enough, we want a subscription service, and that's how PlayStation needed to make money, they would do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you would get the value out of it.
Right.
So I just, you know, whatever. Man,
he's just scared that we're going to, Xbox is going to get more subscriptions after the Activision acquisition goes through. Because, all those games are coming to Game Pass. Yes, I know they're going to be on PlayStation, but the new Call of Duty, Game Pass.
It's going to be there. That is a fantastic segue. We're going to use that to go right into actually item number three. I'm going to bring item number three up to this next to the next topic. The next topic, almost half of PlayStation and Nintendo players, 46%, and the United States would consider subscribing to Xbox Game Pass if the service adds major Activision Blizzard titles. This is according to a new research published from YouGov, which polled 1,200 U.S. adults and 1,200 U.K. ones online in January. It found that inclusion of Activision titles on Game Pass would also tempt 43% of current Xbox gamers not subscribed to Game Pass, 42% of PC gamers not subscribed to Game Pass, and 27% of smartphone users not currently subscribed to Game Pass. So this is exactly what you're saying, right? In that point is that people are like looking at this going, oh shit, wait a minute. If you had all Activision, including all the Call of Duties day and date.
Yeah.
This service is starting to make a lot of sense for me to go and get in on.
Exactly. Like, and yeah, that makes this model is like just so consumer friendly. It's insane.
100%. It is very consumer friendly. You know, and there was at GDC, there was a lot of numbers shown from Xbox showing like more than anybody, indies are actually really benefiting from Game Pass. Something like plus 15% engagement on day one release for indies launching in Game Pass versus not.
That's pretty awesome.
It's a huge jump of engagement on day one. Mm-hmm. And that just begets word of mouth. People are going to learn about games better. They're going to, people are going to buy them. People that aren't in Game Pass that don't really want a subscription service, but, you know, hear about this game that suddenly got a lot of engagement and they're going to go buy it on Steam or whatever, right?
Right.
Yep.
And just to like boost up Game Pass again, you have these PlayStation, almost half of these PlayStation users and Nintendo players, you don't have to even go buy an Xbox. Just get the Game Pass, subscribe. You have it on cloud. You can play it on your computer or your phone.
Yep, 100%. So. Yeah, I mean, listen, could there be negatives associated with Game Pass? Potentially. Mm-hmm. Could you see something like the Apple App Store? I don't really think so. I don't think that can happen on console, not at least to that extent. But you could I mean, theoretically.
It really depends on like how greedy guys at Microsoft can be. Like, it's really on them. Because, like, yeah, at any minute they can be like, oh, this is what we're going to do now. And it's just like this huge thing to where, I don't know, like the Apple thing again and the Epic thing. Like, it's just, I think right now the gripe people are at Microsoft that aren't trying to, like, they're not just seeing dollar signs. And it's good that, like, the reason I like Microsoft is because Phil Spencer's a gamer. So he understands where we're coming from.
Right. Yep. I mean, personally, as a consumer, I see a lot of value in this. Now, if the games start to slip in quality, which I would argue that the best games that we've seen in terms of first party to first party over the last 6 months are from Xbox Studios. Mm-hmm. In Horizon, Forza Horizon 5 and Halo Infinite, I think they stack up more than equally to Gran Turismo 7 and Horizon Forbidden West. I know they're not exactly the same. Well, you got two racing games stacking up against each other there, but and one is not even close as to which one won that situation. But if the quality of the games from Xbox Game Studios do start to fall consistently across time, and not just like there's a dud here and there.
Right.
If the overall quality consistently starts to fall over time, then yeah, you might be able to piece the two together and say, this was not good ultimately for us.
Right.
But I haven't seen that proven out yet.
I don't see it yet either. Because, like, I mean, look at Sea of Thieves, Rare. Like, the way they're doing their seasons now, I don't know if you've read that article, but they're kind of like following Bungie's role as far as like trickle feeding story in their season. Yeah. And that's what they're doing now. And people are just like all about that.
I mean, Sea of Thieves is a resounding success. Another superb game. And it's another live service game. It's a game that has microtransaction. And it's a game that is making money for Microsoft, even though it's in. And let me tell you something. PlayStation has said they've got 10 games, 10 live service games in development right now. They said it themselves. Mm-hmm. I'm not making that up.
Right.
They want in on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely, they want in on it. So are those
going to be on day one PlayStation Plus? Probably not.
Probably not. So not only do they want to bank you for $70 per game, but they also want live service games with microtransactions and continued monetary revenue from. They just want to bank you from everywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Live service games works perfectly for like these subscription types of services, man. Because it's like, for me, it's like the WoW thing. Because I pay $15 a month just for one game for WoW. And right now I'm paying $15 for all these games that have all this content. So like right now, I have to stop playing Sea of Thieves just because like it gives me anxiety sometimes.
Yeah.
Mainly because like I don't want to put all that time in. Yeah. But it is still a fun game, dude. But it's just, those are my types of games, and I'm happy to like. And if PlayStation can put these games on a live service game on their subscription, and they're good, dude, like I'm all about that shit. Hell yeah,
yeah, yeah, 100%. And listen, the last thing I want to say on this is, I know I'm being pretty hard and negative on Jim Ryan and PlayStation right now. It's not because I think PlayStation is bad. Honestly, it's the exact opposite. I love where PlayStation's at right now in terms of the console, in terms of the hardware aspect of it, in terms of a lot of the software that's been coming out on the console, in terms of just the UI, the experience of being a PlayStation player. Like, there is so much good there, but I see a real burgeoning problem here in Jim Ryan's leadership and what he's saying, and I'm trying to get ahead of it as a massive PlayStation fan, so that it doesn't come to a point where now we're in a problem where things are bad.
Right.
And I could be totally wrong on this. And I'm sure there are mega PlayStation fans that feel opposite from me, but this is just how I feel. This is what I see, and this is what I'm calling out. I don't want to see this kind of language from him.
Right.
All right. Number three, which was number two, a new job listing has suggested that Bungie could be planning to develop a Destiny animated show. The company is currently hiring for a senior producer linear media role, which would see the successful candidate taking control of the Destiny, quote, Destiny IP approval process for all extremely developed linear media stories, end quote. Notably, in the required skills section, the application lists, quote, experience with licensed program products and or animation, scripted television development, or current programming, end quote. The application also asks that candidates have a, quote, strong understanding of Destiny and its world. That's a good sign. The people in charge of the Halo show should have had that. Fucking. This appears to be another step in Bungie's ongoing push towards transmedia projects. Yeah, you're excited. I'm excited about this. Oh yeah, I love animation. I'm totally down for that. Like Castlevania on Netflix, fucking brilliant show. I know I'm down on Halo right now, but I'm always excited for extended media of the stuff I like. What about you, Mike?
Oh, I'm excited. Just thing is, it's from Sony, right? So it's not going to be on a Netflix or a Hulu. Where the hell are they going to put this show?
So like they signed a deal with HBO for the Last of Us show.
Okay. So it might just go to HBO then.
Maybe
if HBO. If they already have a relationship with them.
I think that they signed a deal with other, you know, media distribution channels though, for some other shows. I think that they're open to working with whoever will sign up to some of these shows, whoever wants to take on the approach. So although you could see like if they start making enough of it, you could see a dedicated PlayStation, you know, I mean they already have their movie production team, so maybe you could see a dedicated sort of service, you know,
right,
a subscription service that has all of their media in it.
Well, if Jim Ryan has his way, they won't be releasing on their own subscription service for a year.
Yeah. They'll just use other people's subscription services. Anyway, all right. Number four, Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga has had a strong first day on Steam, destroying the previous record for concurrent players on any Lego game on the service. The game was released on Tuesday. That would have been April 5th. And within just 2 hours had reached a peak of 82,517 concurrent users, briefly placing it higher than some regular Steam favorites, such as Team Fortress 2, Rainbow Six Siege, and Football Manager 2022. This completely eclipses the previous record for concurrent Steam users on a LEGO game, which was achieved by LEGO Marvel Super Heroes when it hit just 5,953 concurrent users 8 years ago. That is a massive jump.
That's huge.
I wanted to put this out here for two reasons. One, we're seeing this a lot. Big releases for games right now. It seems like a lot of people are playing video games, and a lot of games are actually doing well at launch, and that's really cool to see. But two, I'm hearing a lot of good things from reviews on this game. I actually quite like the LEGO games. It looks like they've done a lot of good work to revitalize that and not get stuck in the past with their formula the way that someone like Telltale did with the Telltale formula. And of course, the way they handle their franchises is always really good, bringing a lot of levity to it and everything. Right. I'm like sold on this. I'm going to go get this probably tomorrow. And I'm just going to throw another game into the mix of what I'm playing right now because this looks really dope, and that's why I wanted to bring this up.
Right on.
What about you, Mike? Are you at all interested in a LEGO Star Wars game?
I have never been a fan of LEGO games.
Ah, bummer.
Yeah.
Bummer. That's okay, though.
But you go enjoy.
Yeah, I'm going to go have some fun with this one. All right, last news item, number five. The Epic Games Cross Fortnite fundraiser has helped raise almost $150 million for Ukraine humanitarian relief efforts. We mentioned this story last week, and this is the conclusion of the efforts. Epic Games recently, so they recently committed to donating proceeds for a two-week period, and that two-week period has ended. Just to give you an idea of scale, just one day after announcing the donation plan, Epic had $36 million raised. The figure rose to $100 million as of March 29th, and then the fundraising drive concluded this past Sunday at $144 million raised. The money will go to four humanitarian relief organizations: Direct Relief, the United Nations Children's Fund, the United Nations World Food Program, and the United Nations Refugee Agency.
Good job, pretty gamers.
Cool. Good job, gamers. All right, upcoming releases. As I mentioned, LEGO Star Wars Skywalker Saga came out this week. You can get it on PC, PlayStation, Xbox, or Switch, wherever you want to. MLB The Show 22 also came out this week on PlayStation, Xbox. There will be a Switch version, but I think it's delayed a couple weeks. It's not coming out until later in the month. Finally, April 29th, you can get Nintendo Switch Sports. On the movie front, Morbius came out this past Friday, and apparently it sucks. It's like the worst rated superhero movie since like the Hulk or some bullshit that.
Bad.
So that's pretty rough. Coming out tomorrow is Sonic 2. You can check that out. And then next week is Secrets of Dumbledore, which I also read reviewed really poorly. So that really sucks. Everything's lame right now. Anyway, game announcements. Lucasfilm has announced Return to Monkey Island, a follow-up to the acclaimed adventure game series led by original writer and director Ron Gilbert. Gilbert will be creating the follow-up via his studio Terrible Toy Box in collaboration with Devolver Digital and Lucasfilm Games. The company's announced this past Monday, April 4th. The game's debut trailer confirms that Dave Grossman, co-writer and programmer on the original Monkey Island games, will also be returning alongside composers Michael Land, Peter McConnell, and Clint... But I'm going to butcher this. Bajakian? Clint Bajakian? Clint Bajakian? I don't know how to fucking say that. Some name. And Dominic Armato as the voice of Guybrush. Currently, Return to Monkey Island is planned for release sometime this year. I had to give this a shout out. We have a listener, Steven Anderson, writes in frequently. He has been messaging me nonstop this week in his excitement for this fucking announcement. I'm so happy for you, dude, and the other five people in the world that is looking forward to this. Return to Monkey Island. There you have it. Number two, Mario Golf is the latest Nintendo 64 game set to join Switch's expansion pack tier lineup. Nintendo has confirmed the N64 sports title will be added to the service on April 15th and will be available to Switch Online expansion pack subscribers. Number three, remakes of Max Payne and Max Payne 2 are currently in development. Remedy Entertainment has confirmed the games will be sold together as a single package and will be released on Xbox Series XS, PlayStation 5, and PC. The games are currently, quote, in the concept development stage, end quote, suggesting release may still be some time away. Were you a fan of Max Payne 1 and 2?
I never played it.
They were pretty awesome. I only played Max Payne 1 on the original Xbox. Really, really cool game. Number four, Sega and Two Point Studios have announced that Two Point Campus has been delayed by 3 months. The sequel to Two Point Hospital was supposed to release on May 17th, and that has now been moved to August 9th. And finally, number five, Crystal Dynamics announced that the next Tomb Raider game has entered development using Unreal Engine 5. Ooh. Dallas Dickinson, Tomb Raider franchise general manager at Crystal Dynamics, revealed the news on Tuesday, April 5th, to coincide with the full release of Epic's latest game development engine.
Have you done that Matrix thing yet on Unreal Engine 5?
Oh, fuck. No, I haven't. Dude. I've been playing too much Destiny.
Do it sometime like during the day.
Yeah.
It doesn't take long.
I will.
And just marvel at how great everything looks, dude.
You might have to remind me. You might just have to ping me and I'll say, don't text, forget.
I'll send you a text Saturday morning and then Saturday at noon.
There you go. I like it. All right. Free games. So April's PlayStation Plus games are now available. You've got Hood, Outlaws and Legends, Slay the Spire, and SpongeBob SquarePants, Battle for Bikini Bottom. On the Xbox side, Games with Gold, you've got Another Sight and Outpost Kaloki X. Man, what, those games are such bullshit. They really need to stop this.
just those stop are with the Games with Gold. Yeah,
just quit. And finally, XCOM 2 and Insurmountable has been confirmed as the next free Xbox, free Epic Games Store titles. Those will be available April 14th through 21. Until then, you can still get Rogue Legacy and The Vanishing of Ethan Carter. Ooh, we're almost there. Finally, Game Pass titles. So you've got Cricket 22 and MLB The Show 22 available this week, as well as Chinatown Detective Agency, Dragon Age 2, Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare, and Star Wars Squadrons. Next week, you've got four more titles in Life is Strange True Colors, Panzer Corps 2, The Dungeon of Nahu. Why do people name their games shit that you can't say? The Dungeon of It. I was about to say The Dungeon of Inward. It's not that. It's Nahulbuk. I don't know how to say this. Whatever. Don't name your game shit you can't say. And finally, Lost and Random is also coming to the service. And then finally, April PlayStation Now games. I feel like it's worth mentioning these because this is what's going to roll into that new PlayStation Plus service. So April's PlayStation Now additions are Outer Wilds, WRC 10, Journey to the Savage Planet, and Werewolf the Apocalypse. That's it. That is everything. We've done it. We've made it through a fantastic show. Mike, anything else to say before we go home?
No, I want to go home.
Yeah, I want to go home and play more Destiny. Yeah. So that is what I'm going to do. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this here, the 90th episode of the TriCast Gaming Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Remember, like, subscribe, review on your podcasting app of choice. And if you have any questions for the show, DM us on Twitter or Facebook. This show will be back again next Friday with episode number 91. Have a great weekend. Stay safe and game hard.